Well, let's get started. On January 3rd, the U.S. Surgeon General issued an advisory calling on Congress to require warning labels on alcohol labels. And the idea being is that there is a medical tie-in between alcohol consumption and cancer of various types. So the question is, do these warnings make a difference? And from a legal perspective, because that's my perspective here, are those limitations constitutional? And are there objections that can be lodged by these companies who may not want these labels to include that Surgeon General warning? With us to discuss the issue is Professor Wendy Parmet, who is a law professor at Northeastern University Law School. She's a leading expert on public health law and disability law, and she directs the law school's Center for Policy, Health Policy, and the Law. Professor Parmet, thank you so much.
Great to be with you this afternoon.
Let's talk a little bit about what we probably are most familiar with, and that is the Surgeon General's warning on cigarette packages. I'm sure you have followed that and you followed that and looked into how that worked. But let's start before we talk about the efficacy of whether or not those warnings actually do something for the public health and safety. Was there litigation involved when those Surgeon General warnings were going on to cigarettes?
Well, I think it's interesting to note that those labels, the ones we see now, they first appeared in an earlier form back in 1966. And when that happened, at that time, the idea that the First Amendment of the Constitution, freedom of speech, has anything to do with warning labels on stuff that is sold, on products, was simply sort of not around. Courts had not applied for the First Amendment to what we now call commercial speech, speech that has to do with the marketing or sale of products. And so there simply was no constitutional challenge that could have been brought. Such claims only started to become possible about a decade later, after the Supreme Court held that the First Amendment applies to commercial speech. But even then, the court treated laws that compel speech, in other words, laws that require warning labels, very differently and much more favorably than laws that restrict speech. So you couldn't prohibit advertising, but you could require labels on the advertising. That started to change slowly this century. And in 2009, the Congress mandated graphic warning labels on cigarettes. And that led to some new rounds of litigation, challenging, using this new First Amendment law to challenge the graphic warning labels requirement that Congress put in place. And although one court of appeals upheld the idea of graphic warning labels on cigarettes, in 2012, the Federal District Court in the District of Columbia held that the regulations that the FDA had issued to implement that law were unconstitutional.
Now,
After that, I think it's worth noting the FDA took more than a decade to issue new cigarette warning labels. But interestingly, just this fall in November, the Supreme Court refused to hear an appeal of a decision by the very conservative Fifth Circuit upholding the graphic warning labels. So those look like they're going forward. It's been a long story.
So the Supreme Court, does the Supreme Court get into the issue as to whether or not the Surgeon General made a good decision as far as does the science really bear this out, or does the court really make a decision based upon the First Amendment being something that, you know, listen, you can't force a company to put something on a package because that is forcing speech, whether it's right or wrong? Basically, what I'm asking is, what does the court analyze whether the warning is justified or not?
Well, the court's not supposed to do that. But the first question the court has to decide in these cases, any court, and the Supreme Court has not looked at the cigarette warning label case. They decided not to take it. But the first question a court has to decide is what level of review, how strictly, how carefully should the court look at the label? And in making that determination, as to whether the warning label should be given some treated like other kinds of commercial speech, restrictions on commercial speech, or whether it should be given more lenient review, the Supreme Court has said that the court has to ask whether the warning label is purely factual and uncontroversial. Now, again, they're not supposed to look at the policy, but the question as to whether it is purely factual can kind of sort of get them into that question. You know, how good is the evidence? Is it simply an inference? Is the label misleading? So the court's not supposed to go there, but sometimes courts go there.
And it would make sense that the more compelling and scientifically based the warning is, the more likely the court could at least feel in some, you know, in some way that it's justified and that it's good for the public well-being and that it's not really forcing you to say anything except what the truth is, sort of like food labels. You know, you either you have 25 carbohydrates or you have zero carbohydrates. It's a fact, not an opinion as to what's good for you or bad for you. But let's put a pin in that. And we're going to take a break now. Professor Parmet, who is a law professor at Northeastern University Law School, and we're going to talk a little bit more about whether or not these labels actually work. And I'd like to hear from you if you actually look at these labels, and if you're a smoker, do you look at that label and think maybe I shouldn't do this, or do you know it anyway? 312-981-7200. We'll be back in a minute. We are talking about the Surgeon General's proposal that there be labels on alcohol, bottles of alcohol that would tie to warn people that there is a risk between consuming alcohol and certain kinds of cancer. And we're here talking to Professor Wendy Parmet, who's a law professor at Northeastern University and an expert in this area, about whether or not these things present a constitutional challenge and whether or not they work at all and whether or not this is something that is generally a good thing. Professor, thank you so much for holding. Now, when the cigarette stuff happened back in the 60s. You gave us a nice history about how labels were put on in the 1966 or so. There was no litigation, but there was some progressive litigation, and the Supreme Court ruled and upheld a lot of these labels. What was the effect on the public? Was it something that the public recognized as being a warning and they backed down from smoking, or was this just part and parcel of a larger issue of smoking is bad and we shouldn't be doing it and the Surgeon General really didn't have much to do with it?
Well, I think it's first of all important to know that with cigarettes, the warning labels coincided with a lot of different things happening to increase awareness about the dangers of smoking, right? So the warning labels did not happen in isolation. But one of the reasons that Congress back in 2009 decided and required graphic warning labels is because the evidence shows, and we know from what's happened internationally, that it matters a lot. The efficacy of warning labels depends a whole lot on how prominent they are, how visible they are, how emphatic they are, right? So if you have just, you know, black print at the bottom of a box in scientific language, people are going to, you know, roll their eyes over it. We've all done that. We've all seen things and we kind of ignore it. If it's in small print, it's just, right, boilerplate. If, on the other hand, it's graphic, if it's visible, it's maybe disturbing, right, it makes a difference. And so we know that the efficacy of warning labels is very much dependent on the details. How big are they? How prominent? How visible they are? What do they actually say? And so graphic labels, labels that are prominent and visible for cigarettes and also for alcohol, and have been shown to have some effect. But again, the devil's in the detail. You can't just say labels. It's really, what does the label look like and how visible and prominent is it?
And, you know, I also think that when it comes to these two types of things, this is different than food labels or maybe social media labels, although social media has some addictive tendencies, as we now know. But, you know, smoking and drinking are addictive behaviors. So, you know, my question is, if you are an addict in either of those two realms, you know, maybe nothing is going to affect you. But I guess I should ask you this. Does the Supreme Court look at the graphic nature of the speech? Because I assume that a picture of, you know, somebody maybe who, you know, suffering from cancer, some gross picture that would scare you from buying the cigarettes. Is that something the Supreme Court would consider speech and free speech? And would the court weigh in on whether or not that graphic speech is over the top, or is that something that the legislators and the Congress would have to deal with?
Well, I think your question is getting to one of the really interesting things here, which is, I said a minute ago, that, you know, sort of the more graphic, the more it kind of hits you in the gut, right? The more efficacious it may be. And yet, the more graphic it is, the more, right, that manufacturers can argue and have argued, well, this isn't factual. This is going beyond the facts. This is government, you know, kind of trying to impose opinions, and this is going beyond the facts. And that has been the argument that has really been very central to the litigation about the graphic cigarette warnings. And one of the things that the FDA did, it took a long time between 2012 and more recently, is while they still have graphic pictures, they're being much more careful to sort of use, you know, medical pictures, not cartoons, just trying to be very factual. And again, the Fifth Circuit upheld the graphic warning labels for cigarettes recently. But the question about whether the picture is factual or whether it turns into and is really more ideological is certainly central to the litigation. I want to make one other point that we haven't touched. You know, we already have some warning labels on alcohol, right? This is not, the Surgeon General's proposal is not completely unprecedented. Since the late 1980s, federal law has required alcoholic beverages to warn that drinking during pregnancy can cause birth defects and that drinking impairs one's ability to drive or operate machinery and can cause other health problems. So there's already some labeling there, but they're certainly not, they don't point to cancer, they don't mention cancer, and they're not graphic. They're the kinds of labels that, frankly, probably are easy to ignore.
I think we're not that we want to get into the details of all of these things, but, you know, we're seeing more and more of these kinds of warnings. I just saw that New York passed a law requiring warnings for gaming and wagering ads, so that on any ad, I assume it's any ad at all, whether it's sports betting or casinos, I don't know about their lottery system, but that there has to be some sort of warning. And I don't know if it's a referral to an agency for, you know, gambling addiction and those types of things. But you are seeing companies and industries getting out in front of these things to be the ones to issue the warnings themselves, I assume, because they don't want the government doing it. They figure if they're doing it, the government's going to leave them alone. Are you seeing that as the truth of what's going on?
Well, I think companies have often actually wanted to have warning labels, not only because they want to avoid regulation from the government, although that's certainly a factor, but also because they want to avoid tort liability, private liability about failure to warn. So, you know, we're talking about the First Amendment here, but one of the things we want to keep in mind is that the idea that companies that sell products can be liable for the damages that their products cause if they don't warn about it is a really, really old one. It's, you know, standard fare, failure to warn cases. The drug company didn't mention the danger. The snowblower didn't mention, you know, come with warnings about how the dangers. This is this is just standard old stuff. And so companies have long been incentivized by private tort litigation to come up with a whole long list of warnings to really avoid and failure to warn litigation.
That's a good point. And, you know, that's always going to the bottom line. And that's why I always laugh when I see on television all the new prescription drugs and they go off and tell you all of the bad things that can be can happen to you so quickly that no one can even hear any of it. But again, that's the lawyers inserting that language with the idea that if they're on the witness stand at any given point, they say, hey, you know what, we warned you. whether it was, as you say, bold and in a place that's prominent, that would be an issue for the jury and the judge, I suppose. But that, very, very interesting. And let's see if this is going to happen and let's see if there are legal challenges. I want to ask you just about your book. You have a book out called Constitutional Contagion, COVID, the Courts, and Public Health. Can you tell our listeners just briefly, and we only have like a minute left, what is that book about and where can my listeners buy it?
I'll start with that question. It is on Amazon. You can buy it on Amazon. It is and the Cambridge University Press website. The book really looks at the role of constitutional law in affecting and driving the health of Americans, you know, and so it starts with COVID, but it goes back to the beginning and goes forward. And what are the different ways that our constitutional law has shaped our health? Warning labels is a good example, but in the book, I talk about a lot of other areas too, besides the First Amendment, equal protection law, First Amendment, due process law. How has this shaped our health? We don't usually think of the courts as a driver of health, but in the book I argue that the courts and constitutional law in particular really has helped shape the health of our country and is, I argue, one of the reasons why Americans are not as healthy as folks in other high-income countries.
Wendy Parmet, professor, thank you so much. And the book, again, is called Constitutional Contagion, COVID, the Courts, and Public Health.